What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching, so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's 11:40 p.m. in an airplane hangar in Los Angeles, and you're listening to Night Call. Hello, and welcome back to Night Call, a call-in show for our dystopian reality. I'm Molly Lambert, and with me are...
Tess Lynch and
Emily Yoshida.
Here we are, and today we are super excited to welcome our very special guest, Gia Tolentino, staff writer for The New Yorker and author of the essay collection, Trick Mirror, Reflections on Self-Delusion. Welcome, Gia, to Night Call.
Hi, guys. It's nice to, you know, talk to someone after a long day alone.
It's nice to everybody figure out complicated audio setups so we can all connect to each other as humans at home. This is how God intended it to be.
I'm a Zoom master now. I figured out all the things. Well, we were all last night connecting with our friend Fiona Apple, whose new album, Fetch the Bolt Cutters, came out.
I fetched the Bolt Cutters.
Last night, Emily, Gia, and I all fetched the Bolt Cutters.
Oh, yeah.
We just wanted to give our unbaked takes on the album.
I had been like, I just filed a thing that I was like kind of deep reporting all day, and I had like had my head in it. But of course, I'd been listening to Fiona the whole time. And then I went for like a walk the length of the album and listened to the whole thing through. And I mean, I'm still very overwhelmed by it. But one thing, I just felt so grateful for an album that like it requires and demands your complete attention.
Yeah,
you know, and like the more attention you give it, the more it gives you. It's just like I wish that I could be riding the subway and listening to it. Like I wish I could be driving and listen to it. But it's like I just hadn't heard an album like that in a really long time.
Yeah, I basically I was thinking about maybe taking a drive out to the beach, not getting out, but just driving and coming back.
Because that's allowed.
This is an honor that I really only give to like Lana Del Rey albums at this point, as far as like having a dedicated listen. So I was thinking it might warrant that, but yeah. And it's also just like it's really refreshing to hear a new album that really doesn't sound, I mean, it doesn't really sound like it's in conversation with anything else right now, musically or genre wise. It's like its own thing. And it's just like, oh yeah, I'm listening to like a completely fully formed artist who just knows what the fuck she's doing. It's great. I feel like she's an old friend at this point.
Yeah, one of my group texts was saying like we're so lucky that we had her when we were like 13,
Oh, and totally.
Then also when we were 25 and also now, you know, like yeah. I feel
I went down a total spiral about the Spin Girl issue, which came out in 1997, which had Fiona on the cover, which I bought at this mall, the West Side Pavilion, that was just knocked down.
R.I.P. West Side Pavilion, best mall.
To be turned into a Google campus.
Well, one thing I've been thinking about with Fiona recently is that for whatever reason, the way that she's released albums, because she does it very infrequently. This has been like 8 years since Idler Wheel and 7 years. It was 7 years between Extraordinary Machine and Idler Wheel. And for whatever, like whenever her new album comes out, I guess I'm the age that she was when, I guess it's just our age difference. I don't know how math works. I'm revealing this right now. But I am the age that she was whenever she released the last album. So then I'm like going and doing my whole Fiona re-listen and like getting excited and everything. And then I'm like, oh, now I get it in a whole new light. Like passing all these sort of like emotional maturity milestones or something. Yeah.
Yeah, so. it was weird just to like remember the girl issue because it just had a big impact on me. I think it was also the first time I was like, why would you need a girl issue? Why can't it just be an issue? You know?
So I am saving my listening party. I had a crazy night last night that was not super like it was crazy just in terms of like very pandemic-y, I guess. Like my husband was doing something, recording something, and there were technical issues. My kids were having all of these like meltdowns. And then I was like nervous that the emotional impact of listening to this album would be not what I required. This so instead I watched 90 Day Fiancé. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so tell me how, like, where were you when you started listening to it and where were you after? Just so I can prepare.
At home and at home.
Right. <Yeah. laughs> But, like, emotionally, you know, what does it do to you? I'm nervous.
It's, like, interesting because it is, like, we've all been making fun of the celebrities for putting out entertainment and being like, ha, like, captive audience. Like, people are just going to have time to consume things. But then when something that's actually thoughtful comes out and you're like, wow, I have nothing but time to do like a headphone listen in the middle of the night right now. And this is like the perfect thing for that.
Yeah. Is it going to make me super depressed, though, is my question?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Okay, good.
No? Yeah. I don't think it's depressing. It is like, I would say like alarming is a word that I would use, but like in a good way.
Here's what it is. It's like for jazz moms, which we all are, you know? Like,
speak for like yourself.
It's like an experimental jazz album, you know? Yeah,
it sounds like Hot Knife was my favorite song on the last album. So much of it is like that. It's like percussive and really like everything's circling.
I was
walking in the woods and I just felt like very enveloped and clarified, kind of like I was like kind of, it was that like sober trippy feeling where everything, like the edges of everything got really bright and I felt very physically present in a way that I hadn't for a month, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, I recommend, yeah, you were right to save it.
Okay. I'm so, sure. Now I'm really excited. Yeah. I mean, I knew I was going to do it. It's, I think it's just one of those things where often it comes up just the difference in having kids versus not right now and how it may, like, just how you kind of consume media when you have like 2 hours and that's all you have in the day. So I just didn't want it to be the thing that pushed me over. But now I'm like, no, it's exactly what I need.
Yeah, it's great. I can't wait to listen to it again.
Me too.
Yeah. I need another like full.
Actually, you know what? This is why I'm so grateful for it. It's like, it's the kind of album that made, you know, right now it's kind of, and I'm sure it's different when you have kids, but it's like, I haven't felt grateful to be alone in a while. And to be alone with the album made me feel really glad to be alone.
Yeah.
And to like have that space in my head. And I mean, that's like the least of the reasons the album is great, but that was a feeling I had.
Oh, yeah, that's
excited
awesome.
For you.
Yeah, I am too.
I saw somebody saying on Twitter that like I feel like we're going to associate this album, of course, with the quarantine, and but like in a good way. Like this was like a bright spot in it, or like something, some kind of balm, I guess, in the middle of all of it. Which it feels like that's what it is.
It's also nice to know that, you know, like every woman from the age of, you know, whatever to whatever is listening to the same album today. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No,
totally.
It's something unifying. about that.
Yeah, I think I just, like, because she was always just a little bit older than us, I had forgotten how young she was. So I was, like, looking at the spin cover, I was like, oh, it is like Billie Eilish. Like, exactly. It's like a sad teenage girl making music, but, like, the way that gets marketed is very weird. But it also made me be like, oh, Billie Eilish is going to be fine then. Like,
well, Fiona has one thing going for her, and that she is a genius. So that's helpful.
Yeah, but she's also, like, it seems like she is, like, very, you know, eccentric in...
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you know, uncommercial in a lot of ways.
But so. Again, that's, like, the fun thing about listening to something by somebody who's just really doing their own thing right now. Like, she's, like, both... physically kind of put herself in her own little universe, and then the sound is kind of there too, so it just feels very refreshing.
Yeah, I really liked the Emily Nussbaum profile.
Oh, that was great.
In the New Yorker.
Yeah, it was so good.
I think that also got everybody hyped for the album.
And friend of the podcast, Rachel Handler, has basically been like the Fiona whisperer for like the past year.
Yeah.
Like, she's just been like constantly like FaceTiming with her and stuff, which I'm very jealous of, but she's been doing an awesome, like all the stuff that she's written.
Fiona,
all the
come on Night Call.
Oh, yeah. It.
I would love it.
Well, we also wanted to talk a little bit about some other coronavirus activities. Weird nightmares.
The biggest coronavirus activity is sleeping.
We're all doing it.
I had a really scary nightmare. I usually don't have nightmares. We talk about this a lot on the podcast. I think some of us don't have nightmares from smoking a lot of weed, and I may or may not be one of those people. But I had a really intense nightmare the other night, and then realized that I had seen a lot of people mentioning that they also were having horrible nightmares. Not super surprising. But Gia, you mentioned you've been having crazy dreams too, right?
Yeah, well, for me, I think like something, I feel like my brain, you know, supposedly we dream every night, right? And we just don't remember it. We go through like seasons where we don't remember it. I think that like the Times did a piece on this kind of trying to explain like why we're all like, why am I having these crazy dreams? And to me, my own explanation is like, my brain is like, where are all the people? And so it puts all the people in my head at night because it's not used to like, my brain's like, you need to have more people in your line of sight or something. And for me, it's been weird because I'm pregnant right now, and it was weird. Thanks. And I've been like, for the first 2 weeks I was having really intense dreams every night, so much so that I would wake up and sometimes even write them down, which I almost never do, but they had nothing to do with coronavirus or pregnancy.
Were you worried that your husband had sold his soul to the devil for an
I wish he would, honestly. Yeah. Please, also, I'm never marrying that man, please. But
I don't know, John Cassavetes.
Yeah. But then both things started to come into my dreams, you know, like both things are now in them, and all of my friends are in them, you know, which is I think why I think my brain is like, where are these people? Like, you need, they need to be in your sight. And I had a dream last night that I couldn't, like, I woke up and I couldn't remember it, but I've been having, do you ever wake up after a dream and you have such an intense aftershock of feeling?
Yes.
And you spend all day and you're like, I feel like someone is really angry at me, or that I'm really angry at something, or that I just figured out something incredibly important, or that I'm terrified and I don't know why. And you've forgotten what actually happened, but you know, like in your dream, the time lasted like 3 weeks and you're, you know, I've been having lots of those. What have y'all's dreams been
those
like?
Those are the like clingy emotional film where you're like, I don't remember what it was, but I'm like coated in the feeling and I hate it.
I will say, like, because I've been sleeping so much, I've just been oversleeping in the morning period when I'm just like sleeping ambiently to avoid waking up. That's when I have weird anxiety dreams, for
weird
sure.
Half sleep, like trying to get out of bed type stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that's the worst. I hate that. I mean, I will say, like, I've had a lot of other shitty things happen to me during this quarantine, but my dreams have been great. Just cool. Like parties. I feel like I've mostly just been at parties.
It's been that's fine. So tight. That's so sick.
I had to be let off the hook somewhere.
Yeah. My college ex-boyfriend, like so many college ex-boyfriends, was really obsessed with like lucid dreaming, you know?
Oh yeah.
When you try really and into, like cognitive whatever theory, and he would try to, you know, he'd write left and right on his hands and he would stare at them before he like did all the techniques or whatever, and I was like you're being ridiculous, this is so dorky. But now I'm like, I would fucking love to be able to lucid dream so I could party.
Exactly. No,
I was talking with somebody about this, like, because we were talking about how we both like tried to lucid dream at different points in our life, but it's so like the last thing I want to do when I wake up in the morning is like write a journal or like write a report of my dream. That sounds like work immediately in the morning.
It's like a performance review too. You're totally. Like, how did I do?
How good did sleeping? I do? So like I've always sort of not been able to get into it because of that. But then I was thinking like I probably still like don't think I would be able to, because I even just tried to keep a journal during this, which is like something I'm pretty bad at in general, and I can't do it. So I don't know. It might not be my time.
Keeping a podcast. That's good enough.
Like, I'm keeping
also, don't
a record.
Keep a journal of your dreams because they're good. Like, whatever you're doing is good.
The scientist in this National Geographic article about why people are having weird dreams said, some dream experts believe that withdrawal from our usual environments and daily stimuli has left dreamers with a dearth of inspiration, forcing our subconscious minds to draw more heavily on themes from our past.
Yeah, there was this guy that they like profiled in this National Geographic article, and he had a dream that they described early where he like drew on an obsession with comics and like the constant scroll of political posts on Twitter. So he was kind of just using, like, it was like the endless kind of flood of news information had like lodged itself into his subconscious. So that was appearing in his dream and like, you know, plot points, which is that is a nightmare on many levels.
Dreaming about tweeting does sound like a nightmare.
Yeah. Oh, I have y'all ever dreamed about Twitter? I don't think I've ever looked at a computer in a dream. Really?
Oh God! How boring! How banal!
Like, I think really I've had nightmares where I made them. Like, it was probably right after that, the woman who was on the plane and then her life was ruined because she made a dumb tweet. I had an anxiety nightmare that happened to
me. I've definitely had a mistake on Twitter.
Did a mistake on Twitter. Yeah.
It's like my number one panic.
Because it always seems so possible. It's like, it still is possible. It's always possible.
So one of these days your number is up and it's your turn to fuck up on Twitter.
Well, Tess, you were also posting about San Junipero, the Black Mirror episode.
Yeah. So I feel so fragile, but that's also because unlike a lot of people, and this is for better or worse, I am literally never alone during self-isolation. And it's like, normally I carve out at least like an hour or something during the day where I can kind of just like think thoughts quietly, but that doesn't exist anymore. So I feel... I felt like the only thing that was like safe to watch was just mindless garbage or something that I'd already seen and knew how it would make me feel. And so we turned on San Junipero and I was like, whoa, we are kind of in San Junipero. Cause that's just the fantasy of like leaving the physical world because you're gonna leave anyway. We didn't want to leave the physical world, but here we are kind of in a like fantasy space, although it mostly sucks.
I interpreted it in a slightly different way, which was like, oh, because like no one can have like really new experiences, you just can sort of sit and dwell on
the past,
every good experience from your past. And so definitely been thinking, like, and also because there's no FOMO, because it's like no one can do anything.
Exactly.
Yeah. Have y'all been reliving like party? Yeah. Like, all my friends are like, guys,
literally, like, it was like that, you know, post a picture of yourself when you were 20. We were talking about how we all fall into this gap where like there are no pictures of us online when we were 20, although maybe on like Friendster. But then my friend Max Silvestri like posted a picture of us together from a Halloween party in college, like a picture I'd never seen. But I was like, wow, that was the best party in all of college, because it was right when Hey Ya came out. It's like 100% the beginning of our The Big Chill.
I mean, there's also the feeling of like trying to evolve friendships, or like just kind of trying to keep up relationships in a completely virtual way. And in a way like that too, when I was watching San Junipero, I was like, oh, it's this weird like virtual connection, and you kind of just want like new to invite new people into it also, but it's just too weird and it just doesn't feel right.
It's like this weird test on relationships, the you know, keeping things up virtually, but it's like, I don't think it's a test that means anything. I think that that, like, people are putting too much stakes on like, oh, if I don't keep up with somebody during this pandemic, that means that we weren't really friends. It's just like, no, we have like friends that we interface with in all sorts of different ways, and I have lots of friends that I'm not exactly like, let's hop on Zoom right now. But I think that people are really like, oh, like so many friendships are going to be over after this. It's like, no, that's not what friendship is.
Like, it's also like, it's also like, I mean, I spent a whole year completely off the internet when I was in the Peace Corps, like not talking to anyone, barely had a cell phone, you know, middle of nowhere, halfway across the world. And my friendships, like, it felt interminable, obviously. Like, it's only been a month for us here. It, like, Peace Corps was like this, basically, but with no internet. And it felt like forever, and I felt like I had missed out on so much. But then, but friendship-wise, it didn't matter. I just removed myself, and, I mean, it's different when we're all in the same situation, but it, like, I've been reading Wolf Hall, and I keep thinking, like, it's just a month. Like, like, our whole lives are so short anyway. This is just a month of them. Like, it's, our brains are making, it feels endless, and it will be kind of endless, but yeah, when you think about how short it actually is, it's like, yeah, you don't need to keep up with people really.
I've been reading also about like the Cambrian era and stuff like that, just to put the timeline of human experience.
I do that all the time. It's like,
speaking of the timeline of human experience, we wanted to talk to Gia a little bit about a subject she is the expert on: Instagram face. It is Plastic Surgery April here on Night Call.
Never let anybody forget it's Plastic Surgery April. This is
very... Wait, have y'all talked about what do you think is going to happen to everyone's face? Like, do you think that all of them are getting...
That's
like,
how we kicked it off. We talked about some people clearly still have people on call, like Madonna and the Kardashians, I think, have
Right, it's
people.
Like a personal chef. Like, they're just...
But a lot of the B-level influencers...
You know, if you didn't already have your person on call before this all started, like, you didn't have a lot of time to get that sorted out.
The influencers are unemployed too, guys.
Yeah, their economy is collapsing.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about Instagram face and what got you into it?
Yeah, so Instagram face just seemed to me to be one of those things that, you know, any woman between the ages of, I don't know, 20 and 35 who was on Instagram was aware of and talking about, but just hadn't been like written about in a really head-on way. Or I guess it had, but I was like, okay, so there's this thing where every influencer, you know, looks like a combination of, you know, every professionally beautiful woman looks like a combination of Emily Ratajkowski, Kylie Jenner, Bella Hadid, and Kendall Jenner, who looks the same as Emily Ratajkowski. And I was like, they're like, you know, like, the my Marxist instincts were like, okay, what is the material reason for this? Like, what are the material conditions for this production of Instagram face? You know, and so some of my friends who are better Instagram observers than me were like, okay, it's, you know, it's this doctor, and this doctor. I started following them on Instagram and, you know, watching their sort of before and after time lapse videos where you would see people get their Instagram face in real time. You know, everyone's face just started to look like what one of my friends called a sexy baby tiger. And it was just like, you know, I'd already been thinking, like, there's something about being alive today that I've always been like, I'm a little suspicious of how... it sort of seems like social media systems are shaping identity into whatever increases engagement, you know, like they're sort of shaping thoughts and identity. They're incentivizing that, right? And it seemed to me to be really interesting that the same thing was happening literally with your face, that your face, because all of these new technologies were available to tweak and alter your face both digitally through Facetune and physically through fillers, that you could just go back and forth forever, you know, the sort of endless arms race of incremental improvement till you looked unrecognizable and you looked like the same sort of cyborg that every professional professionally beautiful person on Instagram looked like. And so, yeah, I went to Kim's plastic surgeon, Simon Orion, and, you know, anonymously as a patient for a consultation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he like, it was terrifying. Like, I felt
Well, he like told you how, like, what specifically you would need to do to your face to get that.
Yeah.
Face,
and, you know, like, I just walked in and I was like, I'd like to be prettier. What would you suggest? And he did tell me, like, he told me what it would take. Like, I genuinely felt like, I mean, he's clearly an amazing doctor and he was, you know, responding truthfully to this thing that I had said. Sure. But then the thing that depressed me was that I went to a couple other doctors and said the same thing. And within like 30 seconds, they looked at my face and they were like, yep, cheek filler, chin filler, you know, like suck the fat out of your lower face. Like, and then and I was like, fuck, you know, like the whole thing made me think, you know, about like this. Like, I always think about the line between like seeing your body and life as a source of potential is both like amazing and deeply punishing, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'll try to be really sort of mercenary and pragmatic about this. Like, I think I'm cute. I don't care. Like, I'll just like, haha, immersion journalism, see what they say. And then I left Beverly Hills and I was like, motherfucker, like, yeah. I can't look at my own face anymore.
Oh, God. Yeah. Gia, you gotta read Helter Skelter, the manga by Kyoko Okazaki that we just talked about.
I will.
Somebody may have just found a PDF of it online.
Oh, really? Oh, great. Yeah.
Somebody.
It was my dad.
We're gonna take a quick break.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Leesa, the sleep experts. Here at Leesa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Leesa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Leesa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
Welcome back. Well, maybe now's a good time actually to take a night call to talk about the Rubicon of how this began, how we got here.
Let's do it.
Let's take this night call.
Hey guys, this is Brooke, long time, really enjoying Plastic Surgery Month. I've been rewatching The Hills, famously got 10 surgeries done in one day, now regrets it and has a lot of pain, but I think she is one of those people. I think she kind of marks this like demarcation between numerous surgical enhancements and sort of the injections. Because when you think about people that have like really changed the way they look kind of since Heidi Montag, like someone like Bella Hadid, she's done it so piecemeal, and a lot of the things that she's done is more injection based as opposed to surgery. And Heidi, I mean, I think in a desperate attempt to be the star of the season, like did this like huge dramatic kind of like the foxes, like the swan, like full body rehab thing. And she was like pilloried for it. And ultimately like they left the show and were kind of living in Santa Barbara in obscurity, like after The Hills until the new season. So anyway, I just think she's like a really interesting person in this story, and loving this month. All right, guys. Bye.
Great question from our friend Brooke Baker, who really, really smart to bring up Heidi Montag. Yeah, I think what happened is that this happened in two waves in the 2000s. And first, there was the wave of people in their 20s and younger getting plastic surgery for things that were traditionally reserved for older women trying to look young. And then they became about like younger women trying to look like transhuman. So at first, it was kind of, you know, like a freakish, I want to say. It was like treated as a novelty and sort of, you know, something still that like very over the top people only were doing. And then it became normalized via Kylie Jenner. Then there was like a second wave with Kylie Jenner of like, okay, everyone's going to do this. Maybe we're going to acknowledge it, or maybe we're just going to say we're overlining our lips with lip liner and like deny. A lot of people would be like, puberty is what made my lips get big suddenly.
It's interesting to me that people are still thinking about Heidi Montag. Montag was a blip for me. I mean, it just seemed sad, and then I moved on, but I was never that immersed in The Hills. But I guess she was 23, and I do remember her kind of like appearing on, you know, the covers of magazines and stuff about 10 years ago talking about, I think she had 10 surgeries.
Yeah, I want to find the list because it's like really, like it's the first time I ever heard of like a back scoop.
What's a back scoop?
It's like a thing, it's like, I guess it's like, kind of like, I guess a Brazilian without the taking the fat and then putting it in your butt. Like it's just, you basically like,
oh, it's like a lift.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like taking some of your back fat out so
back
that you're like
scoop,
but looks more pronounced or something. I need to find, okay. Here's the list. This was a spread in, People magazine at the time.
Also wait, didn't she have like a bunch in one day?
Yeah, it was all at once. It was all at once. So it was mini brow lift, Botox in her forehead and frown area, nose job revision, because she had already had a nose job, fat injections in her cheeks, nasolabial folds and lips, chin reduction, neck liposuction, ears pinned back, breast augmentation revision, liposuction on her waist, hips, inner and outer thighs, and a butt augmentation all at once.
That's so dangerous.
Yeah. And I think she did have a lot of complications with it. Yeah.
Really?
She said that her heart stopped and they had to
bring
her back.
Holy shit.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think of that episode, the episode where she unveils her face and like she goes home to her parents in like Colorado or whatever. And like her mom sees her daughter like completely remade for the first time, and it's like it's truly one of these moments in that show, and there are many in that show where it's just like, okay, I am watching a work of high art. Like this is like I've never seen this happen before in any medium.
What was the reaction?
Oh, her mom was horrified.
Her mom was really upset. Yeah. But she was trying to be...
that makes perfect sense, of course.
And she was trying to be nice about it. She was just like, well, if this is what makes you happy, but she was like crying and stuff. And it was just like, it was really rough.
Her mom's kind of normal. Her mom is not like a momager.
No, not at all.
Or even like an Orange County like housewife
type.
They
seem very like rich, like Boulder types.
Rich religious people.
Yeah.
It's funny, like I think that the Heidi Montag thing, like I also don't think of her very much at all or at all. But I think that it's funny, she was that sort of early precursor to both this idea that, you know, it makes obvious practical sense in a very sort of unabashed, open way, just modify your body according to whatever will make it more money, you know, and it also makes complete sense, you know, as an ordinary person to, you know, use your own body and personality as a vehicle towards like economic success. Like she's so ordinary that the fact that she did both of those things,
she was already like the bitch on a successful soap opera, you know, like she became the bitch when she did the plastic surgery. Cause actually the thing about it that was concerning, I think, was also that it was like maybe Spencer's idea.
Mm-hmm. That was why I was always so repelled, and maybe why I never let myself become interested in what was going on with her, was that it just seemed like such a gross, toxic relationship, and it didn't seem like I couldn't get interested in it if the dynamic was that it was just like two awful people.
Yeah, and
one of whom was forcing the other to get plastic surgery.
The turn in the show is her friend, like when she gets with Spencer, her friends are like, "We don't like this guy. We think he's bad for you," and then she's just like in it so deep immediately that there's nothing they can do. And then they are together forever and
still together now.
But so. She came out later and said she regretted it. She had a lot of them undone. She said it was like a terrible idea. But I think, Heidi, Kim Kardashian, obviously.
I mean, the thing about Heidi that I feel like is kind of pretty different from the kind of work that a lot of people her age at that time are getting now is that I don't know what she's emulating other than like Barbie or like, you know, Pam Anderson or something.
Her and Courtney Stodden and people, that's like a very specific type of person.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's LA specific, although obviously, you know, like the good version is Angeline. Like idea of, you know, or Marilyn Monroe, just the idea of like, use what you have, augment it a little bit, and then make yourself like a vehicle for selling glamour on your own terms.
But in a way, that's why it doesn't seem as insidious to me, because it's like this came out of somebody's like imagination and had very little to do with peer pressure.
I wanted to throw it to Gia about that, because when you look at the pictures of Heidi Montag, there's a kind of datedness just in terms of comparing it to Instagram phase. And Gia, like when you started noticing this kind of homogeny in the look, like the aesthetic, have you been able to unsee it, is part one? And part two, like, are you starting to notice a shift? Are you noticing like an evolution of that look?
Yeah, I mean, I think it will continue to shift, because the thing about Instagram face that's so uncanny is that it's so gradual. It's like the celeb face things where you can't, where sometimes even if you see a picture being photoshopped before your eyes, you can't tell which is the before and which is the after. Sometimes you can't even see the change. You just know that their face looks different. And I think in the difference, like the real evolution from Heidi Montag to, or whatever, to this sort of thing is that, you know, that was all at once, everything in a day. With the Kardashians, right, it's over the course of 4 or 5 years. And even their doctor said to me, like talking about them specifically, like he was like, you know, my most famous clients, you will not be able to tell the difference between, you know, before and after a visit or even month to month. It's just over years that you can tell a difference.
Wow.
And so it's built in that it always, like it makes it more insidious in terms of with the Courtney Stodden, Heidi Montag thing. It's like, right, you have this one idea and it's Marilyn Monroe, right? It's bombshell, pinup, like Jessica Rabbit, hyper blonde, whatever. With these things, it's this continually shifting cyborg, right? It's like the ideal itself is being collectively created and then continually altered in real time, both by Facetune and by fillers and Botox. And both of those things just keep building against each other. And I think the ideal will shift based on a sort of almost collective voting by way of Instagram likes and sponsorships, like whatever way, whatever face performs the best, that's what, and I think it will kind of shift little bits. But I think, I mean, the thing that really got, and about another difference between the Montag look and the whatever we're seeing now is that one of the things I find most disturbing about today's beauty ideal, like the Glossier whatever vibe, is that it's the sort of performative naturalness, right? Like bare skin, you know, bare skin, you know, eating like
thicker
good
brows
lighting.
And
thicker brows. And then the idea is that you just pump all of this, like you pump all of these chemicals and all of this money into your sort of diet and wellness and skin so that you can give off this like very faux natural aesthetic. Totally. And I think like the way in which, you know, this it's both like deliberately uncanny and also supposed to be this very sort of clean, you know,
healthy.
That's the most interesting thing too, is like the like, you know, eating clean and also putting botulism in your face.
Yeah.
Like
and those things are, and both of them kind of dovetail under this like, you know, bullshit, like girl boss idea that, you know, whatever you do to live your best life is good. Mm-hmm. And both of those things qualify.
Anything a woman does is feminism.
Yeah. And especially anything that makes her money, right? Or like makes her happy or makes her perform better on Instagram. Right.
And that the Heidi Montag thing is like a jackhammer to a piece of marble. And this is more like you can tell yourself it's like, no, you're chiseling away.
And the doctors present it like going to the gym. I mean, that's what they, you know, like, because I asked them about Instagram face, you know, and I interviewed one of them like as myself and not as an undercover patient. And he was like, listen, you know, it's no longer sort of a shameful thing to, you know, want to be happy in your body. And I was like, you know, my eyes are just spiraling because, you know, he's not wrong. I was just like deeply in despair.
And then right, because like Kylie came out about it eventually. She was like, I've had some stuff done. The Kardashians are all still really squirrely on like what specifically they've had done, even though the human eye can tell, you know, from looking at them. But yeah, I think what you were saying about it being an arms race, especially, so it's like anytime a new procedure is invented and it's like any tech thing where they're like constantly like on the bleeding edge trying to come up with new things to sell people. So it's like, I personally will learn about something that I didn't know people did to their faces and then I won't be able to stop seeing it.
There's so many new things.
The brow lift, which people say allegedly Ariana Grande has had, that makes her look very surprised all the time.
And Kylie and everybody.
And the other one is the eye threading thing where people, because also Bella Hadid was like photoshopping her eyes into a cat eye before she did that. They would point it out on Celeb Face that she was like photoshopping her eyes like up a little bit. And it looks like when actresses do that, it's called like the Hollywood facelift where you just like pin your face back with tape.
With tape.
That's what it looks like.
Which just reminds like me of Brazil.
Yeah.
It's the subtle Brazil.
Is this like a thread lift on your eyes? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's a thread lift on your eyes. And Bella Hadid did it. But like now, again, like now that I have seen it, I can't stop seeing it.
Yeah.
And there's a like, thing called, one of my friends who used to work in beauty PR and like fully does Instagram face to herself. She always like, we always send her pictures of like, you know, like Jared Kushner looks super whack these days.
Yes.
Like, you know, like we'll text pictures of like Jared Kushner or Joe Biden or, you know, this new Adele face and, you know, like be like, tell us what they got. And she was telling me about this thing called buccal fat removal. Do y'all know about that?
Oh, yeah. We talked about it last week.
Yeah. It's so good. And I like looked it up and I was like, oh yeah. It's what Olivia Munn got, but she said she ate a lot of Japanese sweet potatoes and her face changed.
I remember that.
Yeah. We were talking about it too, because we were saying like, as we all rep for like the round face crew, it's like having that done makes you look, it doesn't make you look more youthful. It makes you look like more high fashion. in this way that is like
more of a smoker. Like you look like an Olsen twin.
It also makes you look sad because it kind of, unless you do something to fix the fact that it drags your face down a little, like it drags the corners of your mouth down unless you have something to pad it and keep it up. After we wrapped last week, I was like, now I'm going to be thinking about buccal fat removal for the rest of my life.
Well, it's also like it targets insecure people, obviously, but like I've known people who aren't like the most insecure person who, like you said, Gia, it's like you go in and then they just like look at your face and are like, you know what you should do. And like, even if you are a person who is comfortable with your face at this point, it's like just having someone be like, you know what would make your face look better and suggesting it.
Yeah. And it's really crazy, like, especially if with clinics that serve Asian people too, there's a lot of stuff that's assumed that you want because everybody wants right. it if they're Asian. And the buccal fat remover is one of those things because, you know, Asian people tend to have fuller faces, not necessarily always, but a lot, you know, eyelid stuff, you know, nasolabial stuff that all ends up like that. That's stuff that's just like, well, you could, you know, that's just like assumed that in the battery of things you might be going in for that you would want that if you're Asian, which is just, you know, a whole other layer of it.
To me, thinking about these procedures, because I mean, there was, of course, like after there was a part of me that was like, well, if my looks were directly connected to my livelihood, I'd probably get this shit. Like after talking to them, they were like, oh, it's a couple thousand dollars, like lasts for a year. You know, I'd like, I'd be like, maybe I would put that on a credit card. I was really thinking about that.
Gia had to leave. She had a little bit of a technical difficulty. So we're sorry for the abrupt ending, but you can find her book Trick Mirror and all of her other writing on her website gia.blog, and you can find out where to purchase her book and all sorts of other good stuff. So we are so glad that she came by this week. This was great. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it's time to take our faces off.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now. Meaningful Beauty, beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy. And we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep experts. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
Welcome back to Night Call, a podcast for taking your face off. It's Plastic Surgery April. What better plastic surgery classic to dive into than John Woo's Face Off, the movie where two people get facial taken off surgery.
They got face swapped.
They two get face people swapped. Feels like it's underselling it when the people that you're speaking of are John Travolta and Nick Cage. Like, I feel like they're like demigods. They're like on another level. In this movie.
Is it true you had not seen this movie before? I've
never seen Face Off before.
How did you miss it?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's just one of these. I feel like this is a movie you see with a bunch of friends in college in like a somewhat rambunctious setting where there might be some substances enjoyed or something. I never.
Pretty sure I saw it with my parents.
Oh, okay.
In the theater.
Well, I don't know. This feels to me like the kind of movie that I now know, like the kinds of jokes a lot of my like high school and college like guy friends would make a lot. And it's all kind of based out of this, but it was sort of weird to see the Rosetta Stone finally. I mean, this movie is justified. The hype around it is justified because it is super crazy.
Yeah, this movie fucking rules.
Yeah.
I love John Woo and I love the John Woo Hollywood movies. I was thinking about it because I watched Birds of Prey recently.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, Birds of Prey is like the best action movie, best like superhero movie, definitely, but also the best like action sequences I've seen in a long time. And then I read it was because they were doing a lot of Hong Kong style fight choreography.
Yeah.
And Face Off also just sort of was one of the first movies I feel like that brought that kind of fight choreography into American brains that didn't watch martial arts movies already.
Yeah.
And Chinese action movies. But, you know, it's a perfect movie. It's basically like Death Becomes Her, but with men.
It's also, though, it's like it is, I think, Molly, you may have said it's like it's operatic. It is the most heightened emotional movie. I've never seen anything that jumps off from the point of like that elevated kind of like hysteria and only goes up from there.
Yeah. I mean, the whole movie feels like a trailer, which I feel like is the John Woo style, where everything is just hype, like everything is punctuated with like 7 exclamation points, which is so fun.
But it's also, I think it's partially due to the fact that if you're an actor, especially if you're an actor like Nick Cage or John Travolta, you've got to show up to that movie being so excited to get to do this. Like, it's a dream.
Yeah, why don't we explain the setup in case you, like Emily, haven't seen Face Off until now.
I refuse to believe that anyone else hasn't seen Face Off.
My Face Off story is that I saw Face Off with some other friends' parents. This is another story like Death Becomes Her where somebody else's parents took me to see a movie my parents would have probably thought was too scary for me. Even though I was in like 7th grade, they would have just thought it was like super violent. So I saw it. I loved it. Like I did anytime I got to see an R-rated movie. And then I came home and I was like, Mom, Dad, we have to see this movie, Face Off.
Oh,
I just
nice.
Saw it. I want to see it again. You got to see it with me. And we went to see it the next day. and my parents, after we came out of it, were like, that was so violent. Why did we let you see this? And I was like, no, I told you we were going to see it.
I made
you shouldn't have let your parents see it. They obviously couldn't handle it.
Definitely just like one of those moments where I was like, I am differentiating myself in taste from my parents
by
being into like, you know, just violence.
So the plot, if you haven't seen Face Off, hello fellow kids. So John Travolta plays Sean Archer. He's an FBI agent who has been basically like destroyed, you know, by the fact that his son was killed by a terrorist, Nick Cage. I'm trying to remember. Sean Archer. No, wait. Yeah, Caster Troy.
It's
so the deal like also is like he has a brother who's like Pollux Troy because they're Gemini.
Caster and Pollux, little twin, the Roman.
There's
twins.
So many things in this, but
this
anyway,
is a really highbrow movie. It has references to ancient Rome. So.
It's super highbrow. So Travolta is trying to like you know find and catch Cage, and Nick Cage has recently planted a bomb. Where do you plant the bomb?
It's like, it's in the Los Angeles convention center.
The convention center. Which, that's right. There's so many good LA locations.
Yeah,
in this movie
too. I've been seeing, maybe because I've been watching all these 90s movies, I've been seeing the LA convention center in a ton of movies, and I've seen it fill in as airports a lot.
Yeah, it's in a lot of things. Also, they were talking about turning it into a shelter a ventilator hospital, although that has not happened.
It's enormous, which is stupid.
They should definitely could use it for a lot more things than they do, but apparently they're too busy using it.
They might still be using it for Anime Expo, which is still like the only con that hasn't been canceled this summer.
It hasn't
Everyone will send
yet?
Their avatar.
Yeah.
So anyway, Travolta's trying to catch Cage, then to find this like biological weapon and also just like fuck him up because Nick Cage's character killed his son. And so they decide that like the best, can someone else help me? I'm like trying to dig through it and I'm like, I just want to talk about the fucking boat.
No, but, of course. So he tries to.
It's hard to describe.
Wait, you're talking about which part?
No, it's just the to get, like, how do they get, I forget. It's
how
like
do they
he's
get
trying
to getting their faces
He wants
off.
To go undercover in the prison because Nick Cage.
Because the only person who's alive who would know how to defuse the bomb is his brother, Pollux. And
who's
the only person he would talk to would be his brother. So naturally, the only thing to do is for somebody to surgically take Nick Cage's face, Castor Troy's face, and put it on their body so that they can pose as him and go find him in prison.
And get the larynx injection.
Get it chipped in your larynx. Yeah. And of course, the person who has to do this is Sean, whatever his face is, Sean Archer. So he undergoes the surgery. The surgery, I was shrieking at the
amazing
at the screen because it's so like I don't even know anything about science, and you know, I was like, this seems really stupid. The order of operations
it
here.
It doesn't matter. That's what's so great about it.
That's the thing. There's so much, like, every single scene in this movie contains, like, all of these, like, distracting, crazy things and plot, and everyone's, like, screaming and cry, like, and upset and then, like, diabolical. That's why it's so great. It's just,
it's like a sci-fi movie. Yeah. It's like a bunch of, it's a genre mash. It's like a bunch of different genres. So, Sean Archer gets Castor Troy's face. Castor Troy is theoretically knocked out, but then he like comes to and demands that he be given Sean Archer's face.
Which it's also just like, his face that's sitting around and he doesn't have a face.
But it makes sense. It's like, even if he's such a like horrible villain, but if you see someone with like no face on,
and there's a free face sitting there's right there in a tank, you've got to give it to him.
So, you know, he says, I want to take his face off. At some point, the highlight of the movie, they switch faces. What you need to know is that Nick Cage's character, Castor Troy, is like a lecherous, insane person.
Yes.
And that Sean Archer, John Travolta's character, is a family man.
Yes.
A good man.
Yeah.
And his daughter is Dominique Swain, who is a wayward teen and is so good.
So good.
Playing a wayward teen. Wearing some brown lipstick.
The wayward teen really makeup is so specific.
There's
all
a
the
really
time.
Good line where he's like, if you dress up like it's Halloween all the time, you're just going to get ghouls trying to get in your pants. Which is like, yes, please.
His wife is Pat Nixon, I believe.
No, I thought she was Joan Allen.
Joan Allen, who is Pat acting Nixon. In a different movie, 100%. Like, totally. She's in a Sundance movie.
She played Pat Nixon in the Nixon movie, so I just always think of her as Pat Nixon. But yeah, it's also like, she's definitely in a different movie. She's supposed to be the hot wife, but she's like playing it very psychologically, layered.
She's playing it the same way that she played her character in The Ice Storm.
Like, yeah, but in a way it's good because she's kind of like an audience stand-in. She's just like so down in the normal emotional range that you're like, wow, this is really off the rails. Like Joan Allen's kind of looking around like, should I let my husband touch me? It seems like everyone's kind of crazy
right now.
Well, there
is a stranger in the house now. Mm. And his name is Sean Archer with the body, with the soul of Castor Troy.
the body and without that telltale scar.
It's never explained how their bodies are also switched, because they're definitely like different body types.
They said the doctor, I think at one point, is like, you guys have like pretty similar bodies. And it's like, no, they don't.
Yeah.
But he does some like, doesn't he do some light work on their bodies? And then, yeah, there's the bullet
hole. Good enough.
Yeah. Good enough. Good enough. Good just enough suspend to the fool disbelief.
Everybody. So then, of course, Castor Troy, who's really Sean Archer, goes undercover at the jail. It's like a super jail.
It's called Boots
Erewhon, which made me think,
oh my God.
Because it was supposed to be like the prison that nobody knows where it is, because it's nowhere backwards. I'm like, is this where they got the idea for the grocery store from the prison from Face Off? Because if so, I love it.
All of a sudden that just improved. I wanted to say Erewhon
predates Face Off, and comes from a like a novel called Erewhon that's about a imaginary like utopia.
Oh, boring.
No,
sorry for knowing.
I wanted the founders of Erewhon to be huge John Woo fans.
No, but they are low key a cult. So
yeah.
So he goes to the super jail. He finds his brother. Who's very weird.
I have such a crush on Alessandro Nivola in this movie.
Wait, what? Really?
Such a type for me. Like, weird, wiry, like...
I'm so not surprised by
90s
that.
90s guy with, like, a blur haircut.
And he's like, hello, brother.
Hello, brother.
Hello, brother. And then they escape from the jail and go to a super sick party where Gina Gershon is there.
Yeah. She's in the same movie as she's not in Joan Allen's movie.
She always knows what movie she's in.
Yeah, she does.
She's very good at that.
She just showed up on Melrose Place, and she knows what show she's on there as well.
God bless Gina Gershon.
Yes.
I forget what happens after that.
Gina Gershon was Castor Troy's girlfriend, and they have a son, and that's like another weird thing that comes in where it's like, you know, Archer and Troy both had sons, but Cage took John Travolta, so now John Travolta, what's he gonna do with the kid?
Right. Isn't the son played by the same actor too? Like, it's the same kid actor as John Travolta's son, so he's like, sees him and he gets all overwhelmed.
I did not know. That's crazy.
I don't know. Or maybe like that's just the Moppet kind of hairstyle that every child actor had in the 90s. Like,
90s Moppet boy.
But yeah. And she's like also, Gina Gershon is also like the sister of his drug dealer. But like, they like kiss on the mouth. Are they also, is she having a thing with her brother too?
There's a lot of incest vibes in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, of course.
there's one really uncomfortable scene everyone will recall immediately where. Sean Archer, who's really Castor Troy, like kind of hits on his daughter.
It's so gross, guys. I mean, but that's why I love this movie, is like, it just won't spare you.
Yeah.
It's like, you're here.
You want to see a movie or not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a movie.
Yeah.
You will be fucking entertained by this movie. I do know that face transfers really do exist.
Yeah, but they don't work like this at all. Well,
what's cool is that IMDb trivia for Face Off included the nugget that the first real life face transplant was accomplished in 2012 on Richard Norris, who'd accidentally shot himself in the face with a shotgun the same year the movie came out.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Isn't that bizarre?
Do you think the movie made him be like, there's hope?
Like, what do I have to lose? Just my face. Maybe I'll get a better one.
You think after he saw the movie, he was like, I'll just wait until this technology is invented.
I don't think so. No. But face transplants, I remember hearing about face transplants like a while ago and going on a deep dive of the face transplants and how it's like, I mean, that's just like a very, very sad, you know, horrible thing, but also it makes you think like that's what plastic surgery is like.
That's what it's for.
It can save lives. So
there's lots
of
things that like plastic surgery is legitimately needed for. There's of lots course. Of like and especially if you, that's amazing. You can give somebody a new face.
But it's really, I mean, I don't know. I wonder how far they'll be able to come with that, because right now it's nowhere near Face Off technology.
Right.
I'll say that.
I was freaking myself out last night doing some of the Instagram filters. Do you guys ever do that?
No, I did for a while, and then I was just like, I don't know if this, I think I'm too old for this.
There's just all kinds of weird ones now, you know, that make you look very like a Bjork cover. But a lot of them do just sort of like change your face in a way that you were like, it makes you feel weird.
But didn't you once postulate, Molly, that they were just trying to get you to like give enough angles and spend enough time under that gaze that they were like stealing your face off?
Yeah, they're definitely also stealing your face, but that's like what all social media is for. So
why not have fun?
This is just a more fun one.
I want to do it. Yeah.
Well, some of it, I was doing some like, because Emily posted a really good vampire selfie.
Oh, yeah.
Accomplished just with makeup. But then I was like, oh, I'll bet there's some good vampire filters. And I looked it up and there are really good vampire filters, but like they'll make your eyes red, for example. Uh-huh. And some of them have fangs where if you open your mouth, there's fangs.
Oh, that's cool.
It is cool. But then like some of them were also just like really creepy, you know, horrorcore. And I just kind of was like, I don't know. It's a fun disassociative experience. If you guys could have anyone else's face, if you had to do a face off and you could swap faces with somebody, who would you face swap with?
Oh, that's such a good question. I mean, do they have to be alive so that you can take their face?
And no.
Do they take your face, or it's just like hypothetically?
We can 3D print their face.
Oh, okay.
And like graft it onto your face the way that they put like teeth on top of teeth for famous people.
Honestly, I really liked all the faces in Where the Boys Are. I was like, they all got great faces. I might take one of their faces.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to, I can't really think of anybody where I would actually want their face. Other than like any number of the like Instagram face girls that Gia was talking about with us, or just be like kind of interesting to be a hot for a second. But
would you want that? Would you want like the 2020 era face, or would you want, you could go from any era? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I literally have
too many choices.
I mean, I would probably do the one that feels like the only celebrity comparison I've ever had, because then it wouldn't be that weird, I feel like. But and speaking of Bjork, I would like take a young Bjork's face, which is like,
you already look exactly.
You already have.
I know. Bjork. So like that's the thing. I would just like want to look more like Bjork.
Molly, whose face would you take?
Nick Cage.
Oh really?
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun for a day?
I mean, he's
day?
Got such an interesting... Well, oh, for that's a day. I thought saying, you meant yeah. It was permanent. Oh, oh, God.
Well, that's...
I would just take... I would be like in Game of Thrones and take everyone's face on a different day. Yeah. I'd be swapping them out.
Remember in Return to Oz when she has all the different faces?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's one thing I think about, though, is like because Instagram face is like one thing, and the whole thing about like beauty is that it's multifarious in some way and you can't be every type of hot, you know?
Right.
Even if you're a Betty, there's always going to be a Veronica. So yeah. I always think about like, yeah, it's just like, when will we get to the point where people can like swap out their face for like a variety of slightly different faces?
Well, interesting you should say this, because our Night Call listener, Evan, wrote us an email and said, no magic movie science could explain how John Travolta's giant face was going to fit on Nick Cage's regular sized head and vice versa. And then all of a sudden you have to think about like how a face would fit on your head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because you have like this movie takes for granted that people have different skeletons, or like that people don't have the same skeleton. Yeah, because it doesn't like your face. You wouldn't just be able to slap one face onto the other. Like people's skulls are totally different.
You'd really only be able to do it with your twin. And then what would be the point unless one of you got disfigured? And now I've turned this into a not fun game to play.
Well, we were talking about like the weird, like making yourself feel weird by doing Instagram, like the weird arty Instagram fillers. Like, or if filters rather, like
there's some filler ones.
Yeah.
Sure.
But like, I feel like that's one of the fun things about Face Off is like the sort of weird, not quite magic thing that happens with the face, where it's like, like Sean particularly, like he's like wearing the face of the person that he hates. And so every time he looks in the mirror, he's like, ah, I want to kill you, because he like looks like the guy he hates most. But I just, and then it kind of like, he kind of ends up inhabiting the character because he like, that's the person that he sees in the mirror. I like that stuff.
Sorry, that's making me laugh so much. Yeah, it's also like... It's like persona in some way too.
Totally.
It's like, yeah, what does make you unique as a person? Like, who are you actually? Mm-hmm. If you change your face, do you become the person whose face you have? The way that people in horror stories like inherit the personality of the heart transplant.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, there's also the fact that when they swap faces and face off, they start to adopt each other's patterns of speech, which I think is, you're meant to just not really think about the fact that a larynx, like a box that changes your voice, wouldn't change the way you express yourself. Right. But I guess it also makes you wonder, like, is it because your face has more to do with how you express yourself and communicate than you might assume? Is there some kind of like secret sauce there?
I think it's because they're trying to pass as each other. So they're like adopting each other's speech mannerisms.
No, they are. But then there are times when they're like kind of talking to each other or whatever, where they wouldn't have to, but you know, they do.
I will say John Travolta does a really good Nick Cage impression in this movie.
Oh, yes. It's
like, that's like a very low key great performance.
Oh, it's a fucking incredible performance. These are like two such great performances. And yeah, that's the thing, is like the face off, like the surgery is a MacGuffin, you know, it just like doesn't matter at all. It just allows you to set up this thing that's a body swap comedy, basically.
Yeah.
Played as a cool action thriller. But also really funny.
We also have a minor mystery that a listener wrote in about. Listener Craig wrote, I seem to remember a face-off game for PC, but I can find no evidence of it. I think it was maybe web-based or a demo disc. The only gameplay I recall was a level escaping the prison with the magnetic boots. Curious if this will ring a bell with any listeners. I have no recollection of this, but I didn't want to dig too deep.
Yeah. But if anyone knows about a face-off CD-ROM, give us a night call
at 240-46-NIGHT.
This is probably a good time to wrap up our little face-off chat. Any last thoughts on face-off?
Well, I'm glad I finally watched it. It is like fits in right, like very well with all the stuff I've been watching during the quarantine. So
shout out to pigeons flying away during gunfire.
Yes.
Shout out to peaches. I could eat a peach for hours.
Oh, God. I hate to see you go, but I love to watch you leave, as always.
I love that like a line about Cunnilingus is the line that they test his new voice on, because that's the one he has to like say over and over and over again while they're calibrating his voice.
It's a perfect movie, you guys. Well, we will be back next week with more plastic surgery April. It feels like months are going on, both for a very long time and going by very quickly, but we are still in plastic surgery April. So if you have any thoughts on plastic surgery, faces in general, taking faces off, give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT, or you can email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you're enjoying the pod, please don't forget to subscribe and review and all that stuff. We are on Facebook at Night Call Podcast, Instagram at Night Call Podcast, Twitter at Night Call Pod. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week.
And you can also subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/nightcall, where we just put up another bonus episode on Helter Skelter by Kyoko Okazaki. So check that out.
Yeah, and thanks to our guest this week, Gia Tolentino. If you've got any more questions about Instagram face, we'd love to know them, but also it's Y2May after that. So start preparing your 1999 and 2000 based queries. And we'll see you soon.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy. And we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.